fighting soldiers from the sky. Fearless men who jump and die. Men who mean just what they say. The brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat hand to hand. Men who fight by night and day, courage take from the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Back at home, a young wife waits. Her Green Beret has met his fate. He has died for those oppressed, leaving her this last request. Put silver wings on my son's chest. Make him one of America's best. He'll be a man they'll test one day. Have him win the Green Beret.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is J.R. Moore coming to you live from deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks on Friday. Yes, it is indeed Friday, the 30th day of September, the last day of September 2022. Welcome to the John Moore Show. Yes, we do begin with the Pledge of Allegiance as the sun comes up here over the Ozark Mountains. Everybody stand, face the flag. Gentlemen, remove your hats, right hand over the heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The prepper tip of the day is to get a supply of potassium iodine. If you don't know what that is, it's a compound that will accumulate in your thyroid and help prevent the accumulation of radioactive isotopes in your thyroid. We are probably closer to nuclear war than, well, since the Cuban Missile Crisis, quite frankly. That's exactly where we are. I got a good supply laid in here, and I encourage people to do the same thing before it's all sold out nationwide, if it's not already sold out nationwide, which is certainly a possibility. All right. We're hoping that Tom Berryhill will call in. When he does, we will be talking about emergency survival communications and related topics. this is we're getting somewhat used to Carmela Harris, Heels Up Harris, saying really incomprehensible things. Last couple of days, she really outdid herself. She's standing behind a lectern with the seal of the Vice President of the United States on it. I believe she was in South Korea. I'm not sure where she was. I believe she was in South Korea with a U.S. military helicopter in the background. And she talked about our alliance with North Korea. Seriously. The Vice President of the United States talked about our strong, close alliance with North Korea. You can't make this up. Now, this is the kind of thing I would expect a high school sophomore giving a speech to make that kind of mistake. not the Vice President of the United States, who was allegedly a law school graduate. But that's exactly what she did. She talked about our strong alliance with North Korea. All right, moving on from there, my friend Tom Berryhill is with us. Tom began a quest more than half a century ago to understand, comprehend, eventually become quite expert in anything and everything to do with ham radio, emergency survival communications, and electronics in general. Good morning, Tom.
Hi, John. Good morning.
Your audio is a little light on my end. I'll turn my volume up a little bit.
Well, I'll maybe they can adjust it. Okay. I can't turn it up here.
I adjusted it up on my end. Well, Tom, did you happen to see Kamala Harris heels up Paris, Vice President of the United States, in the last couple of days in an address referred to our close alliance with North Korea?
No, I missed that, John. I've been so busy. I'm out of
I know you're busy. I did not expect you to know that, but that's in fact what she did. It's as I said a moment ago before you came on board with us, I would expect a high school sophomore giving a speech to make that kind of mistake, but not a woman who is allegedly, I'm not sure what law school she graduated from. Maybe she got, I don't know how she got there, but allegedly graduated from a law school, is in fact Vice President of the United States, saying publicly that we have a close alliance with North Korea. This is really humiliating and really embarrassing. I'm sure the world leaders are having in private great sport and great fun making fun of us, a president who belongs in assisted living situation and a vice president who believes we have a close alliance with North Korea. How embarrassing. Of course, we send men to international conferences dressed up like women, and we think that's okay also, don't we, sir?
John, I don't know what to say, but you're right on target. I'm laughing myself, but I don't know if we should be laughing or crying. It's really a sad situation.
It's humiliating. It's embarrassing.
It is.
Yeah.
It's really, really bad.
Now, if Apple did this or Google, I would say that's a private company. They represent themselves. If Google wants to send a top executive to an international conference, a man dressed up like a woman, to me, it's a big nothing burger. So what? If Google wants to send, or Apple wants to do this, God bless them. You know, I'm not going to buy their stock. They're obviously insane. But to have these men dressed up like women representing us in international conferences, how absolutely humiliating. Moving on from there, earlier this week, both of the Nord Stream undersea natural gas pipelines were blown up under the ocean. Coming from Russia into Germany, I believe. Nobody's taking credit for this. The mass media wants to blame Russia. I don't see where Russia has anything to gain by shooting themselves in the foot. That was past tense. And Nord Stream 1 was in action. Nord Stream 2 was not quite pumping gas yet. But why would they shoot themselves in the foot, cutting off an excellent stream of income like that? I can't imagine political advantage that they would have from doing that. I can certainly imagine the New World Order or the United States doing it. In fact, President Biden did, in fact, threaten to do that just before the Russia invaded Ukraine 9 months ago. You know, as you know, Tom, I've been a criminal investigator since 1973. I investigated my first murder 49 years ago this month. If I have a suspect who I believe committed the murder and he threatened to commit the murder before the murder took place, that person is real high on my list as a suspect, isn't he, Tom?
Well, yes, that's where you'd want to start. Absolutely.
Of course. Well, given the fact that this these sabotage took place more than 100 feet below the surface of the ocean, I don't know what evidence there would be that would be provable in a court of law or in a court of public opinion. But that's an act of war against Russia. We don't know what Russia is going to do in response. Russia has also recognized Donbass, I believe, and maybe one other province over there as legally part of Russia. Now, any attacks against real estate that now is legally part of Russia would be an act of war against Russia also, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
Of course it would, on the face of it. The point of this part of our conversation, ladies and gentlemen, is to get your attention. I hope I got your attention. I really hope I do. Because we're in perilous times. The prepper tip of the day, Tom, I know you weren't with us yet, is to get a supply of potassium iodine. I'm looking at one of the many, many bottles I've got here on my desk by my computer monitor. And I don't know what the inventory is in the suppliers of this substance are. But once enough Americans wake up to the reality of what we're facing, then the national stocks of potassium iodine will be sold out in 2 or 3 days, won't they, Tom?
Yes, sir. And, John, I've had that on the shelf for years. It's 10 feet away from me right now. So it's a good thing to have. I've seen two types, potassium iodide and potassium iodate. I don't know if one's better than the other. I have some of each.
Right, right. Well, they both accumulate in your thyroid. They both help prevent the radiation from getting into the thyroid, which is a good thing. Thyroid cancer is not a fun thing to deal with. Anyway, Tom, we have new listeners every week. People who barely know who I am don't have a clue who you are. And maybe they heard about ham radio. Maybe they had a great uncle who back in the 1960s had a one bedroom of the house was covered in knotty pine paneling. The whole room was smelled like Prince Albert pipe tobacco. And it was filled up with all this expensive, large, heavy, hot equipment that the great uncle used for ham radio. That may be the recollection many of our listeners have, couldn't it, Tom?
Well, yeah, and that's how it all started. I mean, it was all, well, in the very early days, there weren't even tubes. There were spark gaps way back, 100 years.
Well, you're going back a long ways. What,
way
1920s or 19-teens?
Oh, well, when the Titanic went down, that type of equipment.
Well, that's the 19-teens.
Operators were using,
right.
Yes.
Right.
And very early days.
It was determined a century ago the best way to communicate halfway around the planet or all the way around the planet, well, halfway would be halfway, 12,000 miles, is with shortwave radio, isn't it?
Yes, and what happened in the very early days is everybody was on the same, they didn't actually have frequencies, they were on wavelengths because the signals were so broad, they covered all the frequencies basically, regulated the maritime and commercial traffic to certain wavelengths, and then they moved the ham operators to 200 meters and above. Now, 200 meter wavelength was right above the AM, what's the AM broadcast band now, wasn't in existence in those days, but that's where they pushed the ham operators to get them out of the way, so they weren't interfering with the commercial and maritime traffic. But what the ham operators discovered is that those shorter wavelengths went quite far. I mean, they were transmitting at great distances with minimal amounts of power. And basically, that's where short wave comes from, the word short wave, because the wavelengths were much, much shorter. 200 meters is considered relatively low now, or medium frequency, and then short wave is going up through the 10-meter band for ham operators, which is right at the edge of 30 megahertz. So the ham operators have short wave bands starting at 1.8 megahertz and up to the top of the 10-meter band is 29.7, just shy of 30 megahertz. So it's almost getting into the low band VHF frequencies. It covers the whole thing. And there's a lot of new bands that were added over the years. But the best part about ham radio for wide area communications is that you can pick the high frequency or short wave band that will give you the best propagation for the time of day that you want to communicate. At nighttime, the lower frequencies work quite well. And then a lot of times during the day, you can communicate worldwide with very little power on the higher frequency bands. And a lot of this depends also on the sunspot cycle. So there's a lot of variables here, John. But all in all, if you have some high frequency, short wave type ham equipment, you can't communicate worldwide at any time of the day. You have to work that, get that knowledge built up, and work out the skill sets and everything. But once you're there, you'll figure it out, and you'll be able to communicate worldwide. And this is no towers, cell phone towers, and that business. The infrastructure is your radio equipment, your antenna, and the station you can communicating with, no matter where it is on the planet. They'll have something similar, an antenna and radio equipment, and you communicate directly between those two stations. No infrastructure, cell towers, microwave stuff, none of that business is in the middle. It's from one point to another, and it can be very, very reliable. Sometimes it's not so reliable, depending on the atmospheric conditions. A lot of variables, but all in all, it is a really good way to communicate with modest amounts of power. You don't have to have big, giant, tall towers with huge antennas. You see a lot of the ham operators set those up. I've never had that. My antenna right now is a 350-foot wire strung over the tops of some very tall trees. It's probably about 60 feet off the ground. It's 350 feet long. It works quite well. So that's the basics of what it is.
All right. Well said, Tom. If you do become interested in ham radio, we suggest you find your local ham radio club. And how do you do that? Go to the ARRL.org website, ARRL, that's Alpha Romeo Romeo Lima.org website, and there's a search engine there. You put in your zip code, and you'll find the club or clubs, plural, closest to where you are. And so we've got our first caller here, Tom. We got John in Tennessee. Good morning, John.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Tom. Tom, I've heard all my life that shortwave and CB and other radio bounces signals off the ionosphere. So the question I have for you, if the air gets thinner, the higher you go, how is it that the radio signal makes it through the lower atmosphere, which is denser, to bounce off of something that is thin, and then I guess by means of bouncing refract halfway across the earth? You know, how does the ionosphere bounce a signal if it's thinner than the lower atmosphere?
Well, now, John, that's a whole science in itself, and I don't claim to be as well-versed as others in this, but the basis of the whole idea is that the ionosphere is ionized. It's like an ionized gas, I suppose, from the radiation sunlight, and it's when it's an ionized gas like that is going to allow the signals to be reflective. It becomes very conductive, and it reflects those signals, just like if you held a pie plate up to a laser beam, it would reflect that, or a microwave signal, it reflects it. And that's
okay, hold on,
basically,
hold on, we'll finish this up after.
There were FBI informants at the January 6th protest? What's next? The government going to say that COVID came from a lab? I'm Peter Serafine with today's Liberty Minute. The federal government has finally admitted at least five FBI informants were involved with the Oath Keepers at the Capitol on January 6th. So if there was a seditious conspiracy or insurrection planned, the FBI knew about it. And if that's the case, why weren't the police prepared? Where was the riot gear? Why wasn't the National Guard called up? Everyone knew the protest was scheduled and expected to bring 250,000 people to D.C. Gee, it almost looks like the people in charge of security wanted the protest to turn violent. Find more news and comment at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivas Pashem, Parabellum.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Long-Term Food Storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org. And click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719 extension 3. 800-724-2719 extension 3.
I wish I was in the land of cotton wool town. There I'm not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. In Dixie's land where I was born in early on one frosty morning. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. And I wish I was in Dixie. Hooray, hooray. In Dixie's land I'll take my stand and live and die in Dixie. Away, away, away down south.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. This hour is sponsored by EMP Shield. You want to protect your car, your spouse's car, the car of that youngster off to college with the exact same equipment. I say again, the exact same equipment the Department of Defense uses. You can do that at thelibertyman.com, plus save $50 per piece of equipment. Tom, let's continue with your explanation for John there, sir.
Okay. Now, when the signal bounces, it goes up from your antenna. Now you have several. Can you hear me okay, John?
I'm having difficulty. You're in and out.
Oh boy, modern communications. I guess the ionosphere isn't too good today. Anyway, your signal goes out over the ground. That's called a ground wave, and that only goes out, depending on what frequency you're on, it goes out a short distance or it can go out a very great distance. That's why AM radio stations operate on the frequency band that they do, the medium wave frequency band. During the day, they rely on ground wave, and it goes out several hundred miles. The higher frequencies go out a very short distance on across the ground. They follow the curvature of the Earth. It varies time of day and sometimes even the season. I've noticed many times that the ground wave was better when there was snow on the ground. But you can communicate without the ionosphere using the ground wave, and you pick your frequency carefully depending on how far you need to talk. Then you have and what we're talking about here, John, your inquiry is about the ionosphere. So your signal goes up and it bounces off of those ionized particles that form that layer that reflects that signal back to Earth, and then it comes back down and it hits the Earth and it bounces back up again. It may take two or three hops before it gets to where it's going. So that's how you get these great distances. Now, I also want to explain to anybody listening that there's a, and they call that skip. There's a term that everybody should learn. It's called the skip zone. There's an area called the skip zone, and that's where the ground wave ends, and it's before, in between the end of the ground wave and the first point that the signal bounces back to Earth. That's a dead zone. There's no communications in that range, no matter how much power you're using, because the first skip doesn't cover that area, and the ground zone has the ground wave has fizzled out. There's a skip zone, and that's a dead area where you won't get through at all. So you have to pick your frequencies carefully. If you're planning a specific type of communications, most of the ham radio operations are just wing it. You know, you just do it, and it gets through, or it doesn't. Sometimes they'll plan these things carefully by picking frequency bands that will give the optimum performance for the range you want to communicate. That's really basically how it works.
I understand that, but here's my thought. Okay. And I'm not discounting anything that anyone necessarily believes, but we only call it the ionosphere because science has called it the ionosphere. We only believe that it's ionic, you know, whatever it is you said, ionic radiation or isotopes or whatever, because that's what we've been told. So I can see how they would present that is what's going on. Wouldn't it make more sense? And wouldn't it be much more easy to conceive that if the Bible is true and there is an expanse that God says stands up at his command, that he has placed in the heaven as a tent for us to dwell in, that the firmament is what the Bible calls it, a firm expanse, is like a parabolic reflector on a microphone, that you could actually target regions of the reflector to get your bounce and your skip and all the rest of radio communication. That's just a one-year college dumb truck driver trying to make sense, because science has lied to us so much for so long that we're believing what the Bible calls science falsely so-called. We can't prove anything except what's written in the book, in a science book that says the troposphere, the atmosphere, the ionosphere. And somehow, an aluminum space station is in the troposphere, which is the hot, supposedly so hot they can't measure it, but the aluminum doesn't melt. So the whole idea of radio communications or a contained atmosphere in a vacuum, Tom, that makes no sense.
Well, we have gravity.
And after 500 years, it's still called the theory. So explain that.
Thanks for calling, John. All right.
Thank you.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hey, do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the ones in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, or fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you'll see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Check us out at SusannahSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com.
Hello, I'm Peter Serafine, and I'm the new host of National Intel Report on Thursdays here on Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm a gun-owning constitutionalist who believes that the only role of government is to protect my rights. I believe the First Amendment makes us free, and the Second Amendment keeps us free. If those ideas sound good to you, then join me in the National Intel Report, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Republic Broadcasting Network.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's one, RAD. Consistent results when used for heart problems. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious that if he hadn't made it to the hospital in time, he would have died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives, he tried Extendivite. While taking Extendivite, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our fifth bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. And if...
All right, we are back, ladies and gentlemen. My website is thelibertyman.com. That's thelibertyman.com. There's a lot there. We add to my website pretty much every day of the week. And we have exclusive content you'll find nowhere else on the Internet. The latest intelligence briefing put together once a week by a friend of mine, former counterintelligence agent. News from all over the world. Difficult to find news. And, of course, articles written by my friend Steve O'Neill, the nuclear scientist, published nowhere else on the Internet. As you may have heard, Mike Lindell was pulled over by the FBI and his cell phone seized. You want to help Mike, plus help yourself getting the highest quality pillows, pillowcases, sheets, towels, which like I have. You can do a little shopping at thelibertyman.com, plus save money with the coupon code JRLiberty. Save up to 66%. Winter's almost here. We'll be talking in the third hour about the Liberator rocket heaters. We have them in stock, ready for immediate shipment. Last but not least, I met Tom Berryhill a couple days ago, got a fresh shipment of energy cleaners. I got all my back orders caught up. If you have issues with pain, you need an energy cleaner. Are you not sleeping like you'd like to sleep? You also need an energy cleaner. Check out the details at thelibertyman.com. If you already have an energy cleaner, check out the Micro Plush Throws. They're beautiful, warm, cozy. They're elegant. You can use them on your bed, on your recliner, on your car seat. Only $75 shipping included, American zip codes. Everything's at thelibertyman.com. My toll-free hour line, 24 hours a day, is 800 592-9543. Well, Tom, we talk a lot about the ARRL website, don't we, sir?
Yes, John, and that's a starting point because they have the publications that will help you from just the very beginnings to learn the skills needed to become a ham radio operator. They go all the way up through publications, very highly technical books and publications that are used at the university level for advanced electrical engineering programs. And it's all there, and it's a great source of information. And, John, before we get too far, I've got to make several comments.
Okay.
And I want to tell a quick story that will really intrigue John in Tennessee. First off, I've got to say, if there's anybody I'd ever want to meet that I've heard on Republic Broadcasting, it's John from Tennessee. And I have a feeling we'd sit in a coffee shop for many, many, many hours. And I would probably, when I left that conversation, left to go home, I would, my head would be spinning. That guy brings up more things to ponder than you can handle. It's he's definitely a deep thinker. And, you know, John, I met with a husband-wife team, some friends local here in the local area the other night, had dinner with them and spoke with them at length about many issues. And they're in the concrete business. And the gentleman said, I mean, he was very well-versed. They listened to your show. Very, very well-versed on things. And then he said several times, what do I know? I'm just a concrete guy. I always got a chuckle out of that because he's a very, very wise and intelligent concrete guy. And John in Tennessee says, I'm just a truck driver. What do I know? Well, he's a very well-versed, intelligent, well-read, and knowledgeable truck driver. We need more people like the two gentlemen I just described. We need more people thinking in depth about some of these subjects. It's always interesting. You know, John, there's one more gentleman, and we can't let this session go by today. We didn't get to talk about it enough last week when Mike from Kentucky called in and wanted to talk about soldering. And I hope that we can have
right.
just 2 or 3 minutes.
That well, let's do that right now. It's a good time.
Well,
to
I want to tell this once. I got to tell this one story that happened to me when I was very young on a ham radio. And John in Tennessee is going to be interested in this, and one of these days I'd like to hear what he thinks about it. I've never quite figured it out myself, but this would be in the very early winter of 1968. Now, the sunspot cycle was at the best part of the sunspot cycle, and in fact, some of the old timers back then said it was one of the best sunspot cycles we ever had. They're 11-year cycles, but it's one of the best that was ever known in the history of communications. It would take very little power to go vast distances. I did contact I built a little transmitter that had two transistors, and it would only put out about 2 watts of power, but I was able to contact a station in Manila, Philippines. I still have the QSL card. I should show it to you sometime, John, when we meet. And it was the guy, I remember him telling me on the air, I was so strong that it sounded like I was across the road from him. And he was in the Philippines, and I was in St. Louis, Missouri. It was amazing. I was amazed. But anyway, that's actually a separate from what I wanted to have John in Tennessee think about. But that just sets up what was happening here in that era with the communication ranges with a really good sunspot cycle going on. I called CQ. Now, this is all in Morse code, and when you would when you would send CQ, that means you want to talk to any station. You're just looking for someone to talk to. So I sent CQ several times and sent my call sign, and I got no response. But when you would hear stations, now there was a lot of, even though there was a Cold War and all that, we talked to Russians all the time. There were a lot of Russian stations on there, lots of them. And it was not too hard to talk to somebody from Russia. And their signals would come over the North Pole, and I guess the Northern Lights and the, who knows, the ionosphere, I don't know all the science behind it, but the signals would have a warbled sound to them. There wouldn't be like a nice sine wave tone. There'd be a little bit of a warble to it. You could always tell when it was a foreign station with a propagation path over the North Pole. Anyway, I called CQ, sent my call sign, no response. There was some activity on the band, and I don't remember. I think it was the 40 meter band. I don't remember, but it was. I was just astounded what happened, because I'm tuning around then, and right on that same frequency I was transmitting on, I'm going to say 3 or 4 minutes later, I hear this weak signal with a warbled tone to it calling CQ, and I thought, oh, it's with that warble, it's probably coming, you know, from Eastern Europe, or who knows. It's coming over the Arctic Circle, and it was my own call sign. And, you know, you develop what's called a fist on Morse code. Everybody, they had almost like, that'd be like your accent. They called it your fist because you could work that telegraph key, and everybody sounded a little bit different the way they sent code. Didn't have all these automatic electronic keyers and all that stuff in those days. We had straight keys, telegraph keys, and then things like a Vibraplex bug that was a semi-automatic key. But they were mechanical devices, and depending on how you use them, everybody had a little bit of an accent. I could hear somebody sending code. Oh, that's Charlie up in Chicago. I recognize his fist. Now, when my signal came back, I knew it was me. It wasn't somebody faking it, but it was 3 or 4 minutes later, very weak, with a warbled tone. It was me sending that same message. And it at 186,000 miles a second, which is how fast the radio signal will go through space, or actually through a vacuum. And by the way, John, a lot of people think it does that. It doesn't. It slows down in a wire. That's called the velocity factor. We can talk about that later. But your signal, in theory, and in the vacuum of outer space, would go 186,000 miles a second, a little bit slower through a wire and things like that, and maybe through the atmosphere. But negligible to even mention it, because it's such a small change. But I heard that. What happened? Now, you know, a lot of the old-timers will know who Wayne Green is. He published 73 magazine. And years ago, Frank Whalen, when he was on Republic Broadcasting, he interviewed Wayne Green and myself about health products, you know, energy cleaner type stuff and bioelectrifiers and all that. We were on for quite a while with Frank. And I talked to Wayne several times privately, and I mentioned that story to him. And he was a very well-known ham operator. Very well known. And Wayne, he kind of chuckled a little bit. He says, you know, almost exactly the same thing happened to me. And he said, I said, well, what do you think it was? He says, I don't know. He said, what do you think it was? I said, I don't know. So we both just kind of laughed it off. But how did that happen? How did that happen? Nobody knows. But I, you know, John now in Tennessee gives a lot of thought to these types of things. And it'd be very interesting what he thinks went on. How could that signal that goes 186,000 miles a second, even if it bounced around and went all around the world and came back, it happened a lot quicker than 3 or 4 minutes. I wasn't expecting something like that to happen, or I would have made a notation, you know, what time it came in. I was so shocked and surprised I didn't write down the time. But, you know, we did have a logbook requirement in those days, and every single if you sent one Morse code dot, one little dit, you had to write it down in your logbook. So I had the time of that transmission, but I was so surprised. I was 13 years old. I didn't know what had just taken place. And I thought about that for weeks, and I just, and of course, very few people believed it, but it happened. Wayne Green knew what I was talking about because it happened to him. I know it's happened to others, but what happened? Nobody knows. Isn't that something, John?
It is. It is. That? Well, it's. I guess for the time being, it'll just have to be one of life's little mysteries.
Absolutely. And now if we can go on for a minute to Mike in Kentucky. There's another gentleman that I would... Could you, now, I've heard him call in for years on various shows with some... He's very, very well-versed, knows what's going on. And I'd almost like to be in a conversation sitting at a coffee shop with John in Tennessee and Mike in Kentucky. You could be there too, John. Between the four of us, that would be a very interesting conversation. It would cover numerous topics, political through scientific. It'd be just fascinating. But Mike in Kentucky called in and asking about soldering, and that is a really important subject to talk about because so many ham operators get started and they don't have the proper tools. Now, you know, screwdrivers, wire cutters, things like that. But soldering, when you get into soldering, you have to really pay quite a bit of attention to the items you want to solder together. And soldering doesn't melt the materials you're putting together like welding would. A lot of people confuse the two. And soldering, really the metals melt around 370 degrees or so. It depends on the alloy. And the best solder to use is 63% tin and 37%, 63-37 is what they call it. 63-10, 37% lead. And that gives you what's called a eutectic alloy, which means it's either liquid or molten. Once it goes below the melting temperature, it becomes a solid again. It's molten until it becomes solid right below that temperature. The other types of solders, like what they would use on plumbing and things, 50-50, that has a plastic range, which allows it to be a little mushy for a while, and you can get cold solder joints that way. The ultimate solder is 63-37. I use Kester 44 series, and it's got a good rosin flux. It's available in various diameters. I use all the way down to 15 thousandths of an inch diameter, a Kester 1544. Not advertising for them, nothing like that. It's just what I've used for decades. And also you need a lot of heat. Now, if you're working on printed circuits, you want a fine tip, but I like a lot of heat. A big mistake that a lot of technicians make and new coming ham operators, they just get in and they're just working on stuff for the first time. They don't use enough heat. They get a very low powered soldering iron with the theory that they're going to mess up the circuit board. They'll use too much heat, and really you should think the opposite. Use a lot of heat, get in there, get the job done, and get out off that solder joint quick. Use 63-37, eutectic blend solder. You can use 60-40, that's fine, I use both. But 63-37 I like to use on printed circuits. And then I use a soldering station that has tips that you can change pretty quick. And I use a conical, just like a tip that comes down to a point. There's no little wedge or anything on the end, and that's for very small, if they're surface mount parts, very small print, chip leads, things like that, very small wires. It works great. On larger things, you need a larger tip. And the wattage of the soldering station that I use most of the time is 60 watts. A lot of people, like I said earlier, they want to use a 25-watt iron, a little bitty iron you plug in, a cheap little thing. You can buy them even at Walmart. it's dangerous to use that if you're soldering on printed circuits, because they will the heat will have to build up over a period of time, and that will cause more damage to the printed circuit itself before it gets hot enough to get the solder job completed. So that's important. And then also I use some very large soldering irons that are up to one of them's 150 watts, and that's for soldering big antenna connections and connectors.
Tom,
and
we'll
like that.
Complete your thought after the break. Hold on.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle, or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
So let's fix bayonets. We'll have the advantage of moving down the hill. They gotta be tired, the Rebs. They gotta be close to the end if we are. So fix bayonets. Ellis, wait. Ellis, you take the left wing. I'll take the right. I want a right wheel forward of the whole regiment.
What, you mean charge?
Yes, but here's what we do. We're going to charge swinging down the hill. Just like we pulled back to this left side of the regiment, now we're going to swing it down. We swing like a door. We're going to sweep them down the hill just as they come up. Understand? Does everybody understand?
Yes, sir!
All right, we're back. Well, Tom, I've got about 3 minutes here to wrap up your thoughts for the day, sir.
Well, that's John, that's basically what I wanted to get out on the soldering. You need I recently on eBay, I bought a nice, it was new old stock. It was the older soldering gun, a large 325 watt, I think, Weller soldering gun. I like the older ones, the way they clamp the tips in there. I like those better than the new ones they make. And I found it on there, inexpensive, and I got that because they heat up real quick, and then you let go of the trigger, and they turn off. They got lamps that focus on what you're soldering. It's kind of handy if you're working on an antenna project out in the field. Forget about any of these rechargeable battery-operated soldering irons. Those are a toy, actually a joke. You really need something that plugs in and heats up and maintains that heat for any production-type work. Soldering guns are good for quick connections on antennas. You want a lot of power. You want to get in there, get it heated up, get the job done, and get out of there. Otherwise, especially putting antenna plugs together, things like that, where you're putting a plug onto a piece of coaxial cable, you'll melt that cable and just make a mess of things with an iron that's too small. You want to get the job finished and get it finished quickly. Always remember that, and you'll have good success. So you need to practice a little bit. I got to tell a quick story, John. Years ago, when I did a lot of business with McDonnell Douglas, one of the engineers was down. One of the top guys. He was a really fun guy to be around. But he came down and he was saying something about some of the guys there, some of the engineering crews were admiring the soldering jobs that we did. When we made printed circuit boards, you had to really know they're solder-coated, solder-plated, and the soldering has to be just perfect. And they were admiring that. And he was just wondering what type of soldering equipment. I showed him what we were doing and all that. And then this other guy, a customer, came in one time, and he gave these things to me. He found them in an old barn. And they were soldering coppers. That they heat them up with a gas stove type of thing, and that's how they would solder copper roofing, things like that. Soldering coppers. It looks like a wooden handle with this twisted wire thing with a huge copper tip on it, and they heat that tip up. And it's a very crude look. These things are all rusted and corroded. And so just as a gag, I said, here, why don't you take these? They were given to me. I'm giving them to you. Take them back up there to McDonnell and take them into the engineering department the next time you have a meeting and the discussion comes up. They ask about how we do that. Show them these things and say, that's what we're using. And he did that very thing. And we all had a good laugh about that. But I've seen people try to do printed circuit work with crude soldering equipment like that. Can't do it. Got to have some good stuff. You don't have to spend a lot of money. The solder station I use all the time, even to make the energy cleaners. I've used it for years. I think was $60 brand new.
All right, Tom, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
Okay, right top of the hour break. We'll be back with Ruthie Andrews. Stay tuned, everybody.
Many Americans don't realize government money is their own tax money. I'm Peter Serafin with today's Liberty Minute. A recent poll by YouGov on behalf of Libertarian Cato Institute says that 64% of Americans oppose Biden's student loan forgiveness if it raises taxes. The same poll also showed that 76% would oppose the plan if it would cause universities to raise their tuition and fees. Newsflash, both of those things are true. The cost of college has skyrocketed 1,200% since the federal government took over student loans, almost 1,000% more than inflation. It is also a middle school government class that used to teach that every penny the federal government spends or gives away comes from taxpayers. Have we stopped teaching that, or has the citizenry just forgotten the government does not produce or sell anything? Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem, Parabellum.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.